You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and along with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik, we come to you every week and discuss the topics that doctors discuss among themselves on healthcare topics all over the country. We let you in on those private discussions so you'll be armed with the information you need to fight your healthcare battles and your health and fight for your healthcare freedom. Our show is brought to you by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, a non-for-profit, tax-deductible organization that was founded by doctors who are deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going in. And we offer solutions that are very different than those that have been enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who believe that they know better than you do about the kind of healthcare you should have, who should deliver it to you, and where. Our foundation goes around the country fighting for the healthcare freedom for all Americans and trying to preserve the doctor-patient relationship, very much in jeopardy these days. So go to the website, docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's docs, number four, patientcarefoundation.org. Please contribute generously because these are the people who are carrying on the fight for you for your healthcare freedom. If you don't think you need to be involved, let me assure you, you do, because you're going to be a patient one day and you'll want the doctor of your choice out there. That lead-in is a perfect segue into what we're going to talk about today. In doing show prep for this show this week, I became more excited about what we're going to talk about, which is the measles outbreak and vaccinations and what role government has. You know, we talk a lot on this show about healthcare freedom. We talk about getting the government out of your life when it comes to healthcare and leaving the decisions on your healthcare matters between you and your doctor. Well, that is all well and good, but when is there a role for the government to get involved in healthcare, and is there a role at all? And this topic today that we're going to talk about may be that slippery slope or that gray zone where we have to start rethinking the position about government involvement in people's lives and healthcare matters. So to chat about this topic today, I've invited a good friend of mine, Dr. Pip Spandorfer, to talk to us about his views on vaccinations and communicable diseases in children. Pip is a pediatrician. He's an pediatric emergency room doctor. He trained he went to med school in Georgia here at the Medical College of Georgia, and then he did his training at the Children's Hospital in Philadelphia. And Pip is a activist along with me, somebody who I've spent a considerable amount of time with in different advocacy venues, and somebody who has just a tremendous amount of experience with vaccinations and communicable diseases, both in his medical practice, taking care of children at in North Atlanta Pediatrics here in Atlanta, Georgia, and also in the emergency room at Children's Hospital, Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. So, Pip, welcome into the Doctor's Lounge.
Thank you very much, Hal. I appreciate you for asking me to come and spend the morning with you.
Well, great. Well, let's just get right into this. So last night, the Los Angeles Times updated the status on the measles epidemic. There are now 95 reported cases in 8 states and in Mexico, which they've traced to exposure at Disneyland in Anaheim, California. So what's going on?
I think the interesting fact about that is of those 95 cases, the majority of those patients who now have measles were previously unvaccinated. So it's not as if we have a failure of the measles vaccine. We have a very effective vaccine that can prevent you from getting measles. What we have now is a lot of people who are refusing the vaccines, and now measles is being brought back into the United States, and we're having epidemics like this.
So I thought that everybody needed to get vaccinated.
Yes, that is correct. And there are certainly recommendations or requirements for your vaccines, particularly for school and starting schools, but parents can exempt out for either religious or personal beliefs.
So what are the implications of not getting vaccinated?
I think when we've been able to, when you look at what we've done with medicine, one of the probably the most impressive public health measures we've been able to do to improve public health and to improve, to decrease our infant mortality rates and decrease, the morbidity rates is our vaccination programs. Vaccines are highly effective in terms of decreasing the disease. So when parents are opting not to vaccinate, we're having resurgences of these once, extraordinarily uncommon diseases and causing lots of morbidity.
So let's take a step back and let's just educate people out there. This is a show that goes to everyone, not just medical people. So why don't you tell everyone what typical vaccines are, when you give them, and what kind of schedule we're talking about?
So, there's a lot of currently we have vaccines. We vaccinate children against 14 vaccine preventable illnesses. So there's 14 different diseases now that we're providing vaccines for. Those include diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, polio, strep pneumonia, which is a common cause of meningitis and pneumonia, Haemophilus influenza B, which was also causing meningitis, as well as some other serious bacterial infections. We're vaccinated against hepatitis B, hepatitis A, the measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox. We're vaccinating against the human papillomavirus, and then meningococcus, another cause of meningitis. So those are kind of some of the diseases that we now have vaccines, and we're able to prevent those diseases or cut down substantially on those diseases.
So when do you begin vaccinating babies?
So every year there's a committee on vaccine practices, and it's kind of co-sponsored so that everybody kind of is agreeing on the same vaccine schedule. So that's coming out from the CDC, from the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Academy of Family Practitioners, so that everybody kind of has the same vaccine schedule. And there's ranges of when you can give certain vaccines. But in general, what a normal vaccine schedule is like is we're giving a newborn their first hepatitis B vaccine while they're still in the hospital. We're trying to do that within that first week. Then at 2 months, children are getting, some vaccines. 4 months and 6 months is how we have it set up in our office, so that over their first year of life, they get vaccines really at birth, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, and then again at 1 year. So trying to not make every visit to the doctor a shot visit, but we're going to try to do it about half the time.
Okay. So there are pediatricians who will not allow patients to come into their practice if the children are not vaccinated.
That's correct. And we're actually one of those practices where we feel very strongly in the safety of vaccines. We feel vaccines are safe, that we're not causing harm from the vaccination, but that we are causing harm from not vaccinating children. And when we meet parents before they choose to use us as their pediatricians, we are telling them that we are a fully vaccinated practice and that we are recommending vaccines on schedule, on time. Obviously, there are some instances, rare instances, where we might have to, alter the schedule, but we try to stay on schedule so that we don't make mistakes. I mean, if you try to remember every parent's wishes for this vaccine and that vaccine, we'll make mistakes because we're seeing, a good number of children and trying to keep, what it is that you want versus what it is that somebody else wants on their schedule different. I try to, impart to the parents that if you're trusting me to take care of your child, I really do want to have some trust, and that you're going to have to trust me that I really do spend a lot of time and energy looking into these issues, knowing about vaccine safety, and that just because you read something on the internet or because you saw a special on TV or your mother heard something or your cousin or your sister, that you're going to have to trust me for my medical opinion. And if you're wanting to start a relationship off where you don't trust me, it might not be the right relationship.
The internet has really created some problems for physicians, hasn't it?
It has. but I don't mind parents coming in with information off the internet. I don't mind. As long as they still are coming and saying, what do you think about this? I am happy to talk to a family. And I spend plenty of time on those prenatals talking about vaccine safety. I spend time, if I have a parent in the office who's hesitant, I have time educating and telling them where I find that we're, you know, why I think vaccines are safe.
So do you find that this is that you're spending an increasing amount of time on this subject?
Interestingly, I do find that I spend a lot of time about it. But the whole concept of kind of that whole vaccine safety and are we doing the right thing or not kind of started in the late 80s, early 90s with that paper.
Yes. The paper that you're referring to is a study that was published in the British journal Lancet in 1998, right? And that
was it 98 or earlier?
1998, okay. And it was published by Dr. Andrew Wakefield.
Yes.
And it was a study where he claimed that the rubella virus is associated with autism, and the combined measles, mumps, and rubella, or MMR, vaccine has been implicated. And so this is really what opened up the can of worms.
It is. And it's interesting because after, you know, Wakefield published his study, you would think, you know, the layperson would think that, oh my goodness, the press got a hold of this and started, you know, that's when the whole, you know, anti-vaccine campaign started, but it really wasn't true. It was more that it raised red flags for pediatricians and researchers when we saw that. And when you look at his study, it was probably one of the lower, you know, methodologically sound studies. It was a case series with six patients who developed autism or were diagnosed with autism about a month or so after they received the MMR vaccine. So what was initially happened, which is what happens all the time in medicine and medical research, is when one study is published that has some sort of surprising findings, we're able to go ahead and replicate that study. Other researchers did the same study and were not successful at finding those same results.
Well, I think it was even worse than that, Pip. There was a investigative reporter in Britain, Brian Deer, who did a lot of digging, and between 2003 and 2012, he looked at the history behind this paper, and he accused Wakefield of falsifying the medical histories of the children and concocting a picture that was created in so that he could give lawyers an opportunity to sue vaccine manufacturers and create a vaccine scare. And he profited from this paper by going around the country in Britain and coming to the U.S. and getting tremendous amount of speaking fees and going to the lay public and telling them about the dangers of vaccinations. And so what happened was that when it became clear that this was a fabrication, Lancet had to print an unprecedented retraction of that paper, and Britain stripped Wakefield of his medical license.
That's correct. I mean, it was over that was over a number of years where paper after paper kept saying there is no association, and then finally all the other co-authors took their names off, and finally Wakefield actually, I think, admitted that he did falsify
and
that information.
And that's how this all started, and we're going to speak a lot more about that in the Doctor's Lounge.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. and listen to the Doctor's Lounge, where you get a private insight into the conversations that doctors have amongst themselves. Join us Thursday, 8 a.m. every week.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction and medical director of the Atlanta Healing Center. Please join me on Tuesday afternoons at 4 p.m.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. This is Dr. Hal Schurz. My guest today is Dr. Pip Spandorfer, and we're talking about vaccinations, measles, and the role of the government in the vaccination program in the United States. This is a tremendously hot topic now because of the measles epidemic from Disneyland, and I, as I always do, publicize the show on Twitter and on in other social media such as Surma, which is a physician's chat site, and it's gotten just out of hand the amount of buzz there is about this topic because everybody has an opinion about this. It's not something that is really, you know, in the weeds. There isn't a person who doesn't have an opinion about vaccinations, and vaccinations are sort of like the global warming issue of medicine in a way. It's we know that there could there might be something there, but we know that there's been nothing proven, although there are people in the lay public and even in the medical public who have made careers out of trying to implicate vaccinations as being a bad thing, starting with Wakefield. We just got through talking about him in Britain. We can close off on that. But were people concerned about vaccinations before this Lancet article?
You know, I'm sure people were probably concerned, and we know that some of the older vaccines, when we were using whole cell pertussis, you know, and we now use acellular pertussis, but whole cell pertussis had a lot more components in it.
What does that mean?
Whole cell?
Yes.
So vaccines are pieces of the germs of the bacteria or the viruses that are, you know, cleaned and, you know, put into a form that can be injected into the body and stimulate the immune system.
So when they break it down, they are not live viruses.
Some vaccines are live viruses, some are not. Pertussis was not a live virus. It was a dead virus. It was inactivated and killed. But it had a lot more of the components, and it would tend to cause some vaccine reactions, high fevers. We would have kids with seizures, you know, from those fevers. So we knew that they were not, you know, perfect, but now they've been able to actually cut back to a less immunogenic or less immune system triggering form, because they've really purified out and taken out a lot of the stuff, and it's really much less antigens or much less pieces of the viruses that are being administered in the pertussis. Now we use acellular pertussis.
Okay.
And it's not causing as much. So were there concerns about vaccines? I suspect there's probably always been a question about vaccines. But, you know, the vaccine itself, the any of the concerns that we ever have with the vaccines and the side effects from the vaccines, we know that the safety of the vaccine and the disease that it's preventing is much better than the rare side effects that we were seeing. So not vaccinating, you have a higher risk of injury or harm of some sort, or getting, you know, getting the disease, than you would have from getting, you know, that smaller risk from the vaccine itself.
So the non-vaccination people say kids are resilient. You know, they can be exposed to viruses and develop their own immunity. Why do you need to immunize them?
Well, I think what's happening is a lot of people who are not getting immunized, they're really taking advantage of the majority of the population who is getting immunized.
So that's called herd immunity.
Right. Yeah, so you have herd immunity where the majority of the herd is protected. When we had polio and we were doing the oral polio, that was a live virus. So actually that kind of vaccine would actually spread to some of the people who were actually unvaccinated and provide protection as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've kind of lost my train of thought. Where were we?
Well, we were talking about the fact that you have the herd immunity and why
kids are resilient. Also,
yes.
We were saying, well, like, let's look at measles. Okay, measles. Before the MMR vaccine, there were about 4 million cases of measles a year, and the majority of patients did well, but about 50,000 were hospitalized every year. There were about 400 deaths and about 400 cases of an encephalitis. Now, since we've had the MMR vaccine, we know there's about one death for every 1,000 cases of about four deaths for every 1,000 cases of measles. So we know that there's a lot of, you know, kids don't always get over it.
Right.
And it's not like they are super resilient and can just survive some of these illnesses.
So just as an aside, we've had a show in last year where we had Steve Shore on, who is the chief of infectious disease at Children's of Atlanta. We were talking about Ebola, and we were talking about the enterovirus that was going around the country, to which there is no vaccination.
That's correct.
But that enterovirus is one of the symptoms that we were seeing in children who contracted this virus was neurologic symptoms, including paralysis. And Steve reminded us that all enteroviruses can cause paralysis, and the one that you mentioned before that people today don't have any experience with is the polio virus.
That's
which
correct.
Everybody gets vaccinated for, but in the 1930s, the 1940s, the 1950s, this was a very serious virus. President Roosevelt had polio and was paralyzed. You know, there are a lot of people who don't realize that he was wheelchair bound. He was paralyzed, and he walked with the aid of crutches and leg braces. But nonetheless, it's a devastating disease, and we have pretty much eradicated that, along with some other very, very serious viruses that cause problems. We've eradicated whooping cough, pertussis, but then that people stopped vaccinating, and now it's resurfaced. We've eradicated smallpox.
Right.
The last case of smallpox that was reported was in Somalia in the 1990s, I think.
So when we say eradication, smallpox is actually eradicated from the world. So that is different from almost all the other vaccines when we're saying eradication. When we say we eradicated measles, that is true. Prior to 2000, we were not having measles in the United States,
yes,
but there were still measles in the world.
Correct.
And the same thing with polio. We weren't having wild polio in the United States. But it was still present in the world. So that's why we still need to vaccinate.
Right.
Because when we let our guard down, cases are being imported into the United States.
So you mean like when we have a porous border at Texas and Arizona and California, where they don't have immunization programs in the third world, we're at grave risk.
And not only are we talking about the illegal immigrants, but also even travelers. You know, there's measles outbreak, you know, all throughout Western Europe, you know, civilized Europe. And our American citizens going to Europe can be exposed to measles and bringing it back. as in the case of this Disney exposure, that was thought to be from a travel or travelers, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, but we don't know whether or not they're travelers or they're from people from Mexico.
I guess
those would be travelers as well. But a third group, beside the two that we've just mentioned, are the people who don't vaccinate because they conscientiously object. They get a waiver?
Yes.
Because of their personal beliefs. And this is directly related to certain parts of the country. There are enclaves mostly in Northern California, in the Pacific Northwest, in Oregon and Washington. And not coincidentally, and I'm not trying to be political even though I can't help myself, but these are liberal enclaves, the highest concentration of objectors are people who come from higher socioeconomic backgrounds, who have a little bit of information, because as we know as doctors, a little information is dangerous.
Yes.
and interestingly, and in doing my show prep, I couldn't believe this, but Marin County in Northern California, outside of San Francisco, part of San Francisco, and that should surprise no one, has the highest rate of non-immunization in California, one of the highest rates in a non-religious community, you know, like the Amish or some of the other religious groups have, you know, they have religious exemptions and have high rates. But we're talking about Marin County, people who are attorneys and physicians and techies.
Well-educated.
Well-educated people. Over 6% non-immunization. Can you speak about that?
Yeah, I think it just it goes again where I think that they're really trying to take advantage. In my impression, I think that they are taking advantage of the rest of the people who are protecting their children, and that they're, because there's some question, is there risk, is there harm from these vaccines? And there's been so much media attention as to vaccine safety. Where that they're taking advantage of people and choosing, well, if there's a question, I'd rather not even put my child at risk. You know, they're trying to plan out their whole child's, you know, future from the day that child is conceived, in terms of going off to the best colleges and getting the best jobs and having the most perfect life, and to them, imagining not putting any sort of potential risk or harm. You know, it's amazing because ever since that Wakefield paper was retracted and he actually admitted that it was fraudulent and that stuff has come up, you don't hear as much information coming out of about the media about quote-unquote vaccine controversy, or that they've actually retracted and actually come out and say, you know what, we were wrong. There's a lot of there's overwhelming evidence of the safety and the effectiveness of the vaccine program.
But they opened up the Pandora's box. You can't put the genie back in the bottle once you let it out, especially with some of these people whose you know, major purpose in life is to try to find reasons why they should be contrarians, why they should be libertarians. And it's very interesting that the liberals, who are, you know, the ones who believe that, you know, we should have more government involvement, are the ones who want freedom in this area. And yet, paradoxically, these are the same people who want to outlaw peanuts in school because their kids have a peanut allergy, but they don't want to immunize their kids. Is that like the craziest thing?
It is the craziest thing. I mean, it's like I think that, you know, the vaccine program is important. I think you have kids. You know, I would like to provide safety for the children who are going to school, who are, you know, have any sort of illnesses where they're on any sort of immune suppressant, if they're recovering from cancer or some of the chronic long-term illnesses that take, you know, some form of an immune suppressant. I don't want them to be at risk for these vaccine-preventable illnesses. I don't want them to be exposed to that, and that it's not fair for some healthy people to kind of object.
Well, we're coming up on a hard break, but in the next segment, I think what we're going to talk about is a couple of things. What exactly are some of the concerns about vaccines, specific concerns, and then should the government be mandating vaccinations in all children, and if you don't comply, what should be the implications? So we're coming up to a break. This is Dr. Hal Schurz in the Doctor's Lounge.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schurz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and my guest today is Dr. Pip Spandorfer. We are talking about vaccinations, measles, the government's role in all of this, and the stuff that we've been talking about is really these are problems that pediatricians see every single day. And Pip, you've been in the emergency room and you've seen kids come in, seasonal outbreaks of communicable diseases. Many of these kids have not been vaccinated. And we mentioned before about the high rate of non-vaccination in Marin County, California at over 6%. Do you have a handle on how prevalent this is in other places in the country, like Georgia here where we live?
I don't actually know the percentages. And I think it's, there's not a day that doesn't go by that I don't discuss, even in our fully vaccinated practice, where I'm not discussing vaccine safety. Okay. and having to say, you've chosen us for a reason, trust, I'm not going to cause harm, with your child.
So let me get down to the big question. Should the government be mandating vaccinations in everyone?
I believe that there's a, my beliefs are I do have a preference for, limited government. I'm not asking the government to pay for a vaccine program, but I do believe the government should have some role in saying, if you want to be using our government schools, you want to be using some of our government services, that you need to have your vaccines. I believe the answer is yes, that we know, the government should be providing for the health and safety of the American people, and this is a health and safety issue that I think, the government can provide.
So let's just break that down. Should the government pay for vaccinations?
My personal beliefs is no.
Okay.
I always feel like the government doesn't give anything without taking from somebody first.
Yes.
By saying you need to get your vaccinations, that's one statement. Paying for the vaccinations, it's a different statement. Obviously, we have the Medicaid. We have, and that's not, the Medicaid program, which, probably vaccinates a substantial, number of children in the United States every year. So they are providing for the vaccines.
Right. So is that any difference, mandating that people have vaccinations but not paying for it? Is that any different than mandating that every individual has medical insurance?
It's mandating in the sense that, if you want to drive a car, you need a driver's license. If you want to drive a car, you need to wear your seatbelt. That is a mandate for the safety of the passenger to with the privilege of using the roads that we have in America. So if you want to use American facilities, you know, such as schools and education, I believe there is a difference, because, you know, mandating that you have to have insurance and then the government then becoming an insurance agent, you know, so to speak, and selling a product is a different story.
So if we made Pip Spandorfer the Secretary of HHS or the Surgeon General or even the President of the United States for a year.
Mom, are you listening?
what would you say about this matter?
I definitely believe that I would take away a lot of the exemptions, you know, personal exemptions for vaccination, and that I really would want people to be vaccinated.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I think that we also have to come out with a much more, you know, cohesive, you know, public relations campaign that shows that the safety of the vaccines, you know, that the vaccines are safe. I know they've tried.
Ron Paul, in 2011, said, and I quote, "Intimately personal medical decisions should not be made by the government. Freedom over one's physical person is the most basic freedom of all, and people in a free society should be sovereign over their own bodies. When we give government the power to make medical decisions for us, we in essence accept that the state owns our bodies," end quote.
Yes, it's interesting because at the same, you know, in the same token, then they start talking about our high infant mortality rate and our high, you know, rate of, you know, death from gun violence in the United States. And so I'm not sure you can, you know, politicians should be trying to quote, you know, certain statistics and, you know, playing politics with some of the health stuff.
So some of the people who are communicating on social media about this topic are, you know, very concerned about the influx of illegal aliens into this country, and I will not be politically correct and say undocumented foreign nationals, illegal aliens, and they are by and large never immunized against any of the communicable diseases. So
I mean, there was a lot of thought about that enterovirus outbreak that was happening in the fall, being brought into the United States from South and Central America, from the, you know, illegal immigrants.
So the question really then is, if this in fact is what's going on, and these millions of illegal aliens are in this country unvaccinated, and they're not accountable, what is the benefit of having individuals who are responsible, who are taxpayers, vaccinate their kids?
I mean, that is obviously a major problem, and so it would be, you know, there's going to have to be a political solution to the illegal immigrants, and that, you know, before you're ever going to be able to get a complete hold and get these vaccine preventable illnesses eradicated from the United States.
So
again,
it's really interesting. It's almost these are the unintended consequences of not handling some of the basic issues that our politicians are talking about every day.
Absolutely.
And so from a public health standpoint, illegal immigration is a tremendous problem.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's only in America where, you know, we have probably one of the largest legal immigration systems in the world. I don't think any other country takes as many legal immigrants as we do every year. Do we have so much more discussion about the illegal people, the people who are coming in illegally and trying to provide them services, and then looking at the havoc that's being wreaked on our society by people who are coming in illegally? It's kind of a backwards,
it really is. Well, you know, when people come into your practice, Pip, and they're worried about the vaccinations and you have to talk to them, they're probably concerned about what they read on the internet about potential problems affecting kids who get vaccinations, and some of the things that have been written, some of the things that have been alleged by Wakefield are autism. That was his paper, but there are other things ADHD, learning disabilities, Asperger's,
asthma,
diabetes. So debunk all of this.
There's not evidence that supports that. You know, they also have alleged thimerosal was a problem.
So thimerosal is a mercury-containing compound.
That's correct. We've now taken thimerosal out of almost every vaccine. The only vaccine that still has some thimerosal is the multi-dose flu shot. So you can get an individual dose flu shot, and what that means is the flu shot is in its own individual syringe. They're not drawing it up out of the vial. So when you see a vial and they're, you know, drawing up the flu shot, that tends to be a multi-dose flu shot. And that's really the only vaccine left that has thimerosal. But the funny thing is, there's less mercury in that shot than there is in a tuna fish sandwich. so when you look at the mercury content, right, it is negligible. But that's still what has, you know, it's gotten all this publicity. And when you talk about aluminum and formaldehyde and all that, it's such a negligible amount.
So those are all preservatives that are in these various vaccinations.
Yes.
So, you know, one of the problems with the flu vaccine, which gets, you know, it's a yearly kind of rite of passage of the season, trying to, you know, for the CDC trying to guess correctly and get the right strains in their vaccination. But with the flu vaccine, there was a problem a couple of years ago where they didn't produce enough, and that's because the vaccine manufacturers were not producing it. It was a conscious decision, and from what I've read, these are economic decisions because the risk to the vaccine manufacturers is extremely high because of frivolous lawsuits and other compliance issues that they have to deal with versus the profitability that they're able to get from vaccines.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, every year we have production delays too. I mean, there's with the flu shot too. So, but from an economic standpoint, there are. I mean, you know, I think that there is a substantial risk that these companies have to take to develop the vaccines and get the vaccines licensed and marketed. And the amount of research that goes into determining the safety and the amount of licensure surveillance that goes on continuously, making sure that the vaccines are safe, is, you know, substantial. And I think that the manufacturers do, you know, I believe in a capitalism, and I believe that they have the right to make a profit.
So, have you seen shortages in some of the major vaccines that you give, and do you think that on the path that we're on, that this could be an increasing problem?
That's a good question. I'm not sure we see shortages all the time, but it's often related to a quote-unquote production delay.
Well, production delays mean that they're just not producing it because of business decisions.
But even this year, we had a production delay with the flu vaccine, but then it all came out. So I'm not, you know, so sometimes there might be other issues too. But yes, there something's going on where we always have some shortage of one or another.
Okay, so
but then often it kind of comes back.
It yeah. does, but you know, every physician is seeing shortages in the drugs that they are prescribing.
That's true as well. And people are, you know, a lot of the pharmaceutical companies are stopping making even certain generics. You know, one of the common ADHD generics, Concerta. You know, that the generic has been, you know, we're having trouble finding it right now and getting an adequate supply.
You know, this is you know, a very controversial topic, obviously, about what role government should have in the vaccination program. We're going to wrap this up in the last segment. I have a few more topics I want to cover. This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and thank you for being in the Doctor's Lounge.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. This is Dr. Hal. I'm here with my guest, Dr. Pip Spandorfer, talking about vaccinations, the government, and the Pandora's box that has been opened, and the recent discussion because of the measles outbreak at Disneyland. Pip, you know, off air we were talking about the paradox about the government's involvement in healthcare. On the one hand, we're always talking about, you know, why should the government tell me what doctor I need to see or what treatment I have to have. You know, we have the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force making recommendations about what tests or what treatments are approved, reach a B or higher rating, and those will be approved, and those that are lower than that won't be approved. And, you know, there's been a lot of angst, a lot of reaction to them saying that men should no longer be screened with a blood test for prostate cancer, or women over 50 should not, or under 50 rather, should not receive mammograms. You know, everybody got all bent out of shape about government involvement. And here we are talking about government involvement in vaccinations and why that may be a good thing. So, you know, people, you know, from Mars listen to us saying that we should have less government on the one hand and more government on the other. It's a very confusing,
you know, position to say, well, I kind of agree with this and I kind of disagree with that. But I think one comment is it comes down to a cost-benefit analysis. And it is overwhelmingly clear about the cost-benefit analysis with vaccines. There is no doubt that vaccines are extraordinarily effective in, although they're expensive, that they are preventing substantial amount of money spent on the morbidity and mortality from the vaccine-preventable illnesses, and that it's such a obvious, this is a no-brainer. Okay, there's no wiggle room. This is, you know, saving money for the American people, the American government, you know, for society by using a vaccination program.
As a pediatric provider, I agree with vaccinations 100%, but just for the sake of being provocative, what you have just said, how is that any different than saying me, U.S. government saying, well, you know, it's cost effective if everybody has health insurance and goes to their doctor and uses a medical home instead of an emergency room, we save millions of dollars and it's better health.
Is there any question in your mind that it's better for everybody to have health insurance and everybody to have a medical home? Of course not. We all would think that's the right thing. where I think most of us start to get a little concerned is when the government steps in and says, and I want to be your health care provider, or I want to be in charge of your health care. I want to control those dollars. That's where I think government's overstepping. Nobody, no physician would ever say, oh, you'll be better off if you don't have a primary care doctor. Nobody would say that. You want everybody to have a primary care doctor and to have a medical home and to feel like, okay, you know, here I am as your primary physician, whether I'm a pediatrician or internist or family practitioner. I want to make sure that I'm coordinating things. Come to me if you have concerns with, you know, do you need to go see the pediatric ENT for the recurrent ear infections? Let me help kind of control, you know, yes, you've had 6 ear infections this past year. I think it's time to go see the ENT. Or no, you've only had 2. You know, let's give it some time. You know, like, I think I don't think I'm being duplicitous by saying, it's okay for the government to say, you know, we should vaccinate our children. I still feel like I can reconcile that within my own.
And I think everybody has to come to that realization, because we're really talking about population medicine versus individual medicine. And vaccinations are a big part of that discussion, because from a population management standpoint, there is no question that vaccinations are critical and important, and I believe in them. But As a protector of public or of private freedoms, of healthcare freedom, you know, you also have to understand the place where these people who are anti-vaccine are coming from, even though we don't agree with it.
Right. I think I think there is a role for the government to provide for the public health. In terms of saying these are things that we know are provide for public health, and we have a huge public health infrastructure in the United States, and I think that that's something that is, for the most part, a very good thing. I think that when the government tries to do something better than the private sector, I'm not sure that it does do anything better than the private sector. You know, the government does things that the private sector can't do just because of the sheer volume and the sheer cost. But I do believe that. I do believe that there's a good role for.
So, what are your predictions? What do you think is going to happen with this measles outbreak and with epidemics and vaccinations? Do you think that the government is going to step in and mandate this? Or
our current government? I'm not sure our current government's going to get anything done.
Well, where do you see public health going as far as this is concerned?
You know, it's interesting because, I even sit as the medical director for a summer camp, and we have this constant discussion. You know, here's the summer camp, and, you know, do we allow kids to come into the summer camp who are unvaccinated? You know, we make them jump through all these hoops and get these waivers, but I still feel, you know, that when you're using private services that are not government funded, I believe that the summer camp, and I've said this time and time again to the camp director, that we have the right to say no. You know, we're not taking anybody who's unvaccinated. And I think it takes more pediatricians and physicians saying, you know what, we are a fully vaccinated practice. We're not going to, take care of people who are not vaccinated. And spending time, and it's not just saying that, but it's also spending time and trying to educate, you know, going back to the root word of doctor, it's teacher. And we need to be teaching, our patients, you know, why vaccines are safe and why that it is a good thing for them. And trying to develop that trust relationship with our patients, and trying to get in the right, get them trusting us again.
You know, we can't see patients. We can't practice in hospitals without having proof of vaccinations.
Correct.
Right? And so there are precedents for in certain industries, in certain professions, where the government or some legislative body has come down in schools, in states. Every single state has a provision that kids can't go to school without proof of immunization. Isn't that correct?
Yes. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, and I think, you know, when you say what's my prediction, I think we're going to see this measles outbreak getting even bigger and bigger. If you look at, you know, there's a nice graph that we've seen with this measles outbreak. And if you look, you know, the number of measles cases has been in the 100 to 200 range or less since 2000, or, you know, even, you know, less than 100. And then last year we had I think it was 644, almost 650 cases. And this year, we're already at 95 for the first month. I think we're just going to see this escalating number of measles, and it's just going to keep spreading until we can get a better control over vaccinations.
Do you think we're going to see outbreaks in other diseases?
Yes. I mean, we certainly are seeing a lot of pertussis as well. I don't have numbers on pertussis, but we're definitely seeing a lot of pertussis outbreaks.
That's whooping cough.
Whooping cough, yes.
Right. And what about polio?
You know, that does make me a little nervous. We haven't been seeing a lot of polio right now, but it certainly is possible. It's still out there.
So who is at risk? Who's at greatest risk?
The young children certainly are at greatest risk, and anybody who has any sort of chronic medical problems are at greater risk as well.
So
elderly.
People who are cancer patients on chemotherapy,
yes.
Immunosuppressed.
Yes. Personally, I can tell you, patients with, some IBD, they're on anti-inflammatories.
Inflammatory bowel disease.
Yep. They're on, immune suppressants like the tumor necrosis factor alpha A, blockers.
Right. And young children, those are children who were too young to receive the MMR vaccination,
yes.
Which doesn't get given until about 15 months,
yeah,
right?
It can be given after – it counts if you give it after a year of age. If we have a child 6 months old and older who's traveling abroad, it's actually recommended to give it, even though we still need a booster dose, a second dose to actually count as a first.
So some of the people who are pro – immunization, who are very angry at what's going on right now, are and rightfully so. They're basically saying that they have babies, and the recommendation is in areas where there are outbreaks of cases that they stay away from public areas like malls or mm-hmm. or other
grocery stores,
and they feel like they're the victims.
Absolutely. I've always felt that people who are not vaccinating are taking advantage of those who do,
So what is the solution?
Is there a solution?
Is there a solution?
I'm not sure if there is a solution, but I think that, continued public, public education, public health outreach, I think is where we're going to, keep going. We're going to have to just keep going on and on with our efforts.
I think we need to have somebody who is a spokesman who is trustworthy and believable.
Yes.
But even then, it's my belief that the prevalence of information or misinformation is making it so that anybody who has a conspiracy theory is going to get their opinion out there.
A lot of the journalists are giving they like to do both sides of the story, whether there's truth to the
right.
other side or not. They like both sides. They
that's
feel like
right.
that's a the balanced approach, but I think that sometimes that's harmful to
even if the other side has been fabricated.
Absolutely, they feel like it's somebody's viewpoint.
Well, this is a topic that is not going away, and this was a fun discussion and something that's very provocative, and we're going to be seeing this for a long time to come.
Yes,
I want to thank you, Pip, for being here today and in our doctor's lounge and chatting about vaccinations and the role of the government. This has been a very provocative and fun discussion.
Thank you very much, Al. I appreciate you having me.
Well, again, thank you, everybody, for being in the doctor's lounge on America's Web Radio. Until next time, this is Dr. Hal Schurz.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.